Ladies and gentlemen, Cairo Radio is honored and privileged to present to you Cairo Nights with Mr. Talk Radio, Jack Stein.
Wow. Welcome back. Welcome back to the highest rated radio program in the Pacific Northwest between 7 and 10. I had a wonderful conversation earlier today with Ursula Royteen. A lot of people talking about what are we going to do about gun violence in the United States. And I thought to myself, I'm going to chat with my good friend Ursula. So here's that conversation earlier today. Ursula Royteen, host of G and Ursula, joins us yet again. Ursula, I gotta ask you this question.
Yes.
Are you having a tough time this week? Because I am having a tough time this week, to be totally honest
with
you.
I shared with our listeners that in the past I have dealt with anxiety attacks, and so I've had them under control for years.
Yeah.
But this was the first time in a long time that I felt like I might have one. I had a really hard time. It was when I was finally trying to fall asleep the night after the massacre that I thought, I cannot bring down this feeling like I'm about to have a heart attack.
Yeah.
And I know what that feeling is, and I know that it is anxiety, and I just hadn't felt it in a long time. Because we're all impacted in some way when something this tragic happens.
Yeah, I've noticed some people do this weird thing, Ursula, and I don't do this, but I've been on Twitter and on Instagram and on Facebook looking at different broadcasters, just kind of talking about it, and I've noticed that some broadcasters are doing this interesting thing where it's, I don't think that they know how to process the emotional set around having to talk about dead kids, like dead children, especially kids who are 9 or 10 years old. And so they're kind of making it about themselves in a very tangential way. And it's one thing to say, I have anxiety or I have emotions around this. But I think it's another thing for people to kind of begin to try to wrap themselves into it, if that makes sense. And I don't know if it's because I don't have children or maybe because, I've never had to take my kids to school or something. But I've been reading people saying, I had a panic attack taking my kids to school this morning. Or people saying, the hardest thing I've ever had to do is drop my kids off at school this morning. And I was thinking to myself, like, shouldn't we be focusing more so on how we can, A, ensure that this doesn't happen again, and also, B, how do we actually talk to children about the fact that statistically the safest place in the United States for them is actually at their school, right?
Well, I think it's a whole combination of things. So I will address the first part.
Yeah.
I think when you talk about how it's impacting you, that's something that we can all relate to. Because if you bring that up, and that certainly was not the focus of our show, and I specifically wanted to make it about what are we going to do differently this time? Because anything that we're doing right now is not working.
Yeah.
So if we're not willing to open up our minds and maybe recognize that we each individually have a role in this. We all play a role. We can't keep blaming, well, it's all the Republicans, it's all the Democrats, it's all the, NRA, it's all this. Now, there is blame to go around, but my emphasis was, where can you start with yourself? And one of the things that I decided was that I'm not going to mention the name of this killer.
Yeah.
This 18-year-old boy who decided one day that he was going to shoot his grandmother and then shoot up a school. So because we hear about copycats, et cetera, and I don't want to glorify him in any way. But I think it's okay to share that how you're feeling about this, because it's almost inescapable unless you turn off all media. And yes, you don't have to be a parent. So, Jack, I'm sure you felt your feelings are valid. Just because you're not a parent doesn't mean that your feelings are not valid.
Sure.
So I have no issue with that. The issue I have is when people want to automatically go to that blame game and automatically make it extremely political without looking at what it is that you can do as an individual. And I just think it's a time for self-reflection as well. So, you know, that's my biggest issue, too. And then also, it's just talking about, hey, what are we going to do? What can we do? And it's really trying to appeal. And so, again, this is what I was hoping to do with our show, is trying to appeal to reasonable people. And I think that I constantly go back to, the vast majority of us in this country are reasonable, but we're only hearing from the extremes.
That is very based, Ursula, to use a term that the kids like to use. That's very based in reality. I think it's very true. I totally agree with you on the using of the shooter's name, and I wish that the Big Five would stop using the guy's mm-hmm. name. I don't do it on my show. I don't know anybody else. John Curley doesn't do it. Dory doesn't do it. You guys don't do it. Dave Ross doesn't do it. So I don't understand why everybody else.
But that's a new thing, actually.
Yeah.
That is a new thing. And yeah, you're right. Not every network does it. A lot of times it makes it easier to tell the story. Because you can put a name to it. A lot of times it's people will get something from that name. But I figure here in Seattle or in this, you know, in the Pacific Northwest, that name is not going to mean anything to anybody. Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't add to the story.
So I like what you said about appealing to reasonable people, because I have heard nothing but irrationality from many color commentators out there. Not people at Cairo, but just people on the national level. Absolute irrationality stemming from, we need to ban all firearms. Then on the opposite side of the spectrum, which is basically the what do you want me to do about it crowd, which I find to be the most awkward part of some of my conservative friends out there who are like, oh, shootings happen. What are you going to do about it? And so I think that if there was a combination, and this is what I wanted to talk to you about, if there was a combination of, for as much as I'm like federal government bad, if there was a combination of federal funding for every public school in the United States to get doors like how I had at my high school with the locking pin that goes directly into the ground that makes it impossible to open from the outside, in combination with I think they're called EOP officers the officers who are
like resource officers,
like thank
school
you
resource officers
like schools if a combination with that, which would be a federal program or a program that was done by the states that was funded through federal tax dollars, I think that most people would be on board with that idea. And this is my evidence for that. The rates of bank robberies over the last 50 to 60 years have dropped precipitously because banks started instituting a set of rules. One way in, one way out, security guards, so on and so forth. And now criminals are saying, why would I want to rob a bank? It's the most risky endeavor that a human being can engage in. The second I walk through the door, someone's going to hit the panic button. They're going to lock the doors behind me. I'm not going to be able to get out. It's not worth my time. If sociopaths understood that if they went to a school that had lockdown procedures, locking doors, panic buttons, an armed security guard, I don't think they would do it. Even if they wanted to, if it was an impulse like the sociopath in Texas, or if it was something that was deeply planned like the Parkland shooter, I think that they would be dissuaded from doing that. That's my running theory, Ursula. I'm curious how you feel about that.
So I think that there are some additional safety measures that should be considered. And I personally am in support of having law enforcement and school resource officers, but really acting as school resource officers, because I don't think it's only about security and safety, although that would be obviously a big part of it too, but also just establishing that relationship. Sometimes it's your school resource officer who's going to see that troubled child, because so often these young men who decide to arm themselves with assault style rifles are very troubled. And so if you have someone like that who is trained to notice that, because we can't keep making it about the teachers being the ones to do that job. And an extreme idea would be arming teachers. I think most teachers don't want to be armed. They already have enough on their plate. Now we want to, you know, some people want to arm them. I don't think that's the answer, but I do believe, yes, if you can make the money available, and we should make the money available, I love the idea of school resource officers. Not everyone's in agreement with that, but I think that, for me personally, if my kids were still in school, That would be something that I would consider. But you also have to look at what happened in Uvalde. They have a dedicated police department for the school district. And even with that, they were not able to stop this 18-year-old madman. So I think that we should look at that. But the thing that frustrates me most, Jack, is that whenever we have this discussion, gun rights activists or advocates, people who believe firmly in the Second Amendment, which I believe in Second Amendment rights. But when the conversation starts with this is not a gun problem, I have a problem with that, because we all have to look at the whole array of potential solutions. And even if people say, well, it's a mental illness problem, you've heard it before, but it's true. Other countries also have mental illness issues. You know, mental illness is just, you know, since the beginning of time, people have had mental illness. But we are unique in the United States in terms of what happens at schools and these mass shootings that they, yeah, you can find, you know, what happened in New Zealand or what happened in, but we lead the way, and this is not where we want to lead the way. So my question is, why is it that when most of the country, including card-carrying NRA members, want and support things like expansion of background checks or red flag laws, if someone's deemed a danger, a gun can be taken away temporarily, or I know they're talking about yellow flag laws when you have to have it signed off by a medical professional,
right?
Or a ban on assault rifles. Why, when the majority of the country says, yeah, we would support those things or some variation of it, that there are some people, including Senator Ted Cruz, who says, nope, that none of those would have saved the kids in Texas. Case closed. That frustrates the heck out of me.
Yeah. I think that there is a fear amongst members of the GOP that any encroachment on 2A is a death sentence, in the same way that for Democrats, any encroachment on like the teachers' unions is basically a death sentence to your political career. There is like a I think that they have to kind of balance their principles as Republicans and also conservatives by saying, I want everyone to have equal access to firearms, with the knowledge that if they even hint at the idea that there would be any restrictions to your access to a firearm, that's basically a political death sentence, right?
Yeah, that is considered that, and people have been convinced that that would be the way. Well, if we even give an inch, they're going to take, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But we can't think that way anymore. Otherwise, yes, this insanity will continue because we think that something's going to change, even though we're not willing to change. And I looked into it, and you know that gun manufacturing right now, that is a booming business.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I can't remember the figure, but it was like billions and billions of dollars in profit. And then I also looked into someone like Ted Cruz, and I was like, why is he just so adamant about not even considering anything? Well, he has received nearly $450,000 from gun rights groups, including the NRA, of course. So really, people like Ted Cruz, in my opinion, are a huge part of the problem, because we've got 50 senators, well, and it sounds like some may be budging, but if everyone thinks the way Ted Cruz does, we are not going to change. And I think that Republicans have done a good job of scaring people who are responsible gun owners to thinking that if you give even an inch, all your rights are going to be taken away. And it's just not true.
Yeah, and you know, Ursa, to your point about what is the United States, what is our problem with guns? There was a story that went under the radar yesterday. A teenager went to his high school somewhere on the East Coast. I wish I could remember where it was. It just was a really small local story. But he went to his high school and he told somebody there that he had brought guns with him. And he did so to try to intimidate that person. And so that person then goes to the principal, and the SWAT team shows up, and all these officers show up, and they go to the kid's car. And lo and behold, he has an AK-47 style weapon and an AR-15 style weapon, but both of them shoot Orbeez, little plastic beads, non-lethal, like replication firearms, right? So what I thought about, and I was thinking about this for hours after I read the story, that kid didn't go to that other kid and say, I have brass knuckles, or I have a Molotov cocktail, or I have, I don't know, like, anything. I don't, I've got boxing gloves in my car. He said, I got guns in my car. So what is it about Americans, and I'm going to broaden this out kind of anecdotally, but what is it about Americans where the, for many, many Americans out there, the default, the most intimidating that you can be, the most in your face you can be is, I've got a gun and I'm going to use it and I'm willing to use it. That's something that you don't see in other countries, I think.
Yes. But other countries do say, I mean, they do have laws in effect that make it essentially, I mean, much stricter. And we're not even talking about trying to do some of those things in this country. We're,
right.
we're saying even take some baby steps. But I mean, I think that we also need to look at, yes, the impact on these first person violent video games, which, you know, I'm the mother of two young men. I had to make choices about what kind of media they would use, video games, etc. And I had conversations. I have a close family situation, and I would be able to talk to my sons about, hey, you know, this is not reality. You know, if you, you know, and I would be in enough in touch with my kids that, you know, I would know if there were trouble, and we would talk about things, and I would say, you know, I, as much as I tried, I didn't want them to be playing with guns, but, you know, they're going to figure it out some way.
Yeah.
Some kids are going to be okay with it, but others are not. So I am a firm believer in, first of all, I mean, we glorify violence more than other countries do. I will say that. I mean, and it's so complex, but I absolutely think we need to do better about putting money into mental health treatment. There are schools, we're talking about trying to arm teachers or put security gates and metal detectors, et cetera. You're talking about, there are some schools that don't even have enough money for books, and that's not an exaggeration,
sure.
or pencils, where teachers are having to come up with their own money. So we have to figure out what our priorities are. And one of the things has to be better access to mental health starting at a much younger age. And we can't rely on the same school counselors who help your kids figure out what, you know, college they're going to go to being the ones that also deal with people who are struggling with their mental health.
Ursula,
that, you know, as someone who's served on a school board for many, many years, I've seen that.
Yeah.
We don't want kids to continue to be killed. We don't want anyone to be killed, but we don't want kids to be continue to be killed. And the other thing is that we know that what we're doing right now is not working. So we have to be open to other possibilities.
Ursula, I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you taking the time. We'll take a really quick break. And I think Dr. Z is going to be coming up next. So, and we're going to be talking about the salmonella outbreak that's currently happening not only in the Pacific Northwest, but across the nation. We'll be right back right after this. To Cairo Knights. Joining us is our resident MD, PhD, Silver Fox, and Robot Brain, Dr. Z, doing the robot into the studio. Wow, Dr. Z, I've never been break dancing right into the studio. So, Dr. Z, being that you're an MD and a PhD and you have a robot brain, I was deeply curious about your thoughts on salmonella and whether or not you're for it or against it, because Washington is now part of a multi-state salmonella outbreak linked to peanut butter. I had no idea, Bill, that salmonella could live in peanut butter, but I guess it can. And so Seattle Department or State Department of Health is working with local and federal public health partners to investigate a single case of salmonella. Why is it such a big deal, Bill? Why is this salmonella? I hear about it all the time, but why is it such a big deal whenever it happens?
Well, it could be bad. You know, it could actually kill somebody that has a weakened immune system or child. It's not not something good to get.
Okay, so what exactly is it? And because I know that people, sometimes it ends up like, I used to hear about this all the time. You hear about, you know, a salmonella outbreak in the Salinas Valley that's attached to lettuce, or you hear about right. salmonella on right. strawberries or broccoli. What is it, and why is it such a I guess, a transmissible thing in food?
Have you ever heard of typhoid fever?
Yeah.
That's salmonella.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a type of salmonella. You know, there's typhoidal and non-typhoidal. The typhoidal are more dangerous, you know, typhoid fever. And this is a bug. This is a bacterium that goes intracellular, right? It actually infects the cell, which is, again, makes it a little more difficult to treat, because if it's in the cell, you know, you've got to get antibiotics, into the cell in order to, get this bug treated. So it's something that can get out of hand pretty quickly and, you know, poison some folks in a bad way.
Dr. Z, you're absolutely blowing my mind right now. So what you're telling me is that the bacterium gets into the cell. So forgive my 5-year-old brain. It gets into the cell lining, like in the stomach, and then it, and that's what causes the illness, or what exactly causes like the illness?
Sure.
Sure. Yeah.
So all of the above, but basically if it enters the blood, then it can get around and, you know, it can get into, a number of other organs, but this is something that primarily will infect the gut, and it can infect immune cells as well, so it can make it difficult for the immune system to mount a specific reaction, you know, more of a non-specific reaction, which, you know, is typically what causes the end stage of COVID, where there's this overwhelming immune response that is not specific or directed.
Dr. Z, you are blowing my mind right now on my radio show. This is like, when I hear salmonella, I think like, oh, someone, you know, they get a little ill and then they throw up all over the place. This, like, the biological mechanism of this, I find to be absolutely fascinating.
So where you are at risk, where people are at risk for getting salmonella
yeah.
is at fast food restaurants. Yep. You may have gone into the bathroom and seen the sign that says all employees must wash their hands
right.
with hot water.
Yeah.
If they use the restroom, and that has to do with the fact that this is a fecal oral route. That's one of your favorite routes, isn't it? The fecal oral route.
Yeah. That's so gross, Bill. Okay. So the other thing that I find really interesting. So Bill, the other day, Bill Gates tweeted out something that I thought was like pretty innocent and pretty non-political, where he says, hey, you know, the movie Outbreak with the monkey that spreads the Ebola virus, that's pretty accurate. And I think that we should have a team of biologists and virologists that can respond in kind to outbreaks. And when I read something about like a salmonella outbreak, or like I guess in Los Angeles, there's a fear that there's going to be an outbreak of typhus because of all the rats and all the homeless people, I think to myself, maybe that's not such a bad idea. Like, maybe we should get Dustin Hoffman and Kevin Spacey, like people, to actually show up with the hazmat suits and have it be at the federal level, instead of it being a state by state level. For as much as like I'm a state kind of a guy, maybe we actually need a response team like that, so they can actually track things like these salmonella outbreaks and understand where exactly the peanut butter is and all that other kind of, I mean, they have the information here, but I think that it might be better if there is an actual dedicated team, in the same way that we have like a, you know, like a federal response team or U.S. Marshals or something like that. Does that make sense, Bill?
Yeah. Well, it does. And I think that that was something that was put together for COVID.
Right.
But because of the because of upper management, it all went to hell in a handbasket.
That's true. That's very true.
Right?
Yeah, that is very true. And that is kind of the unspoken thing about COVID, is that the Obama administration did put together a task force to deal with the outbreak of infectious diseases. And then in about 2017, 2018, that was considered to be excess by upper management, if you want to put it that way. And so the resources and the funding to that specific federal organization were cut dramatically. So, and lo and behold, then you have an outbreak. So, Bill, just out of curiosity, if someone consumes peanut butter and all of a sudden they start having and also, this is what they're saying. They're saying that there is a voluntary recall for select Jif peanut butter products sold in the United States. Specifically, they go on to say that you should immediately dispose of Jif peanut butter with lot codes 1274425 through 1240425. And so if someone has eaten and they suddenly come down with symptoms, what is your advice? I know you can't give like hardcore medical advice on the air, but if someone, one of your patients came to you with these symptoms, what would you advise them to do?
Oh, if somebody said, hey, I had the peanut butter and jelly sandwich for lunch and now I have a fever.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, oh, yeah, you need to go to the hospital.
Really? Wow.
You watch how things go, but if somebody's really, you know, looking sick, and by the way, as I'm, you know, looking further and further into this, you know, there are bloodstream infections that can be caused by the non-typhoid type of salmonella, and those can be like 20% to 25% fatal.
Wow. Okay. So this is much different. And I guess this is why the Washington State Department of Health put such emphasis on this in releasing this this press release, because they are very, very serious about people not getting salmonella. So, Dr. Z, where can people find you if they want to talk to you in your big robot brain about various and sundry medical issues?
Maybe at zenantimd.com. Is that it?
I think that might be it. But you got to spell your last name for people, because it's the most complicated last name I've ever had to try to spell in my life.
Zinnanti.com.
Dr. Z, we love you. We appreciate you. And we'll touch base with you next week. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back with Of Two Minds coming up right after this. Got two thoughts about traveling on Memorial Day weekend. Two thoughts about traveling Memorial Day weekend.
This is the end.
I understand that this is like the first official weekend of summer. Shane, I understand that the people want to go out there, little children running around. Like, go take them to the beach or take them out into the woods. You want to take them maybe down to Portland. You want to enjoy some laughs and some giggles along the way as you're driving places with your family. You know what I'm talking about, Shane. Stopping at a gas station. Hey, who wants snacks? All that other kind of stuff. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I'm picking up what you're putting down.
I am of two thoughts about it, because I understand that people want to do it. I understand that people want to go places. I understand that, hey, it's Memorial Day weekend. It's time to travel and barbecue and all that other stuff. I have gotten a lot of mileage out of not doing that. I have gotten a tremendous amount of mileage in my life of shifting around my travel plans to not peak weekends. And I think that the vast majority of people would feel a lot better about their lives if they didn't waste unnecessary time sitting in traffic. This is the thing about traffic, Shane, is that there is no greater waste of human life than sitting in traffic. None. It just simply does not exist. It is worse than prison. You can do nothing with your time when you're sitting in traffic. You can do nothing. You sit there. You are just waiting so desperately for your life to continue in a particular linear direction. And you're just sitting there. And the time is just compounding. And you're getting more and more upset as the time gets worse and worse and worse. So the reason I'm of two minds about this, Shane, is that I understand that Chris Sullivan came out with a report. He was saying the best time to travel is before 10 a.m. or after 6 p.m. And everybody's got these like really kind of, they got these plans that they want to go do. I might recommend to people that they change their plans. If you've ever made plans, go do them. But in the future, Try the Jack Stein method. It's Memorial Day weekend. Guess who's staying home? See what I'm saying, Shane? And then what you do is at a different point in time, that's when you take your long weekend. That's when you go visit the fam, when you don't have to waste your time in traffic. What say you, Shane Peterson?
I don't know if I necessarily agree with you, Jack Stein. You know, I know traffic is an absolutely miserable thing, but, you know, this Shane. Memorial Day weekend, listen, you know, I have some plans for this Memorial Day weekend, and, you know, there is going to be a Johnny Cash cover band, from what I hear, playing at a bar in Roslyn. And it's going to be on a nice, beautiful, sunny day. It's going to be on a back porch. Where am I going to get the beautiful sights and sounds of the happy little town of Roslyn? Kids running around, people being, you know, merry, filled with cheer. And then there's me, sitting there, completely hammered, listening to Johnny Cash. What more of a beautiful sight do you picture?
Shane. I'm not mad. I'm not upset. I'm not mad. I'm not mad, Shane. I'm not upset that you're disagreeing with me. I am not upset. I just thought that, you know, you and I have been doing the show a long time together, and I just thought that maybe you and I were on the same wavelength, Shane, and I just thought that you were picking up what I was putting down.
No, I was picking it up. I could pick things up and put them down and still not like it. You know, it could be a little sticky sometimes. But you know, sometimes you got to put up with some of this traffic because, Jack, you know, there's going to be parades this weekend. Parades, Jack. Who doesn't love a parade?
Shane, I just got to say, it's not about you disagreeing with me. Okay. It's not about the parades. It's not about the Johnny Cash weekend or whatever it is you're talking about.
Cool. It's a cover band, but thanks.
It's about the fact that you said that you were picking up what I was putting down, and then you decided not to pick up what I was putting down and insult me on my radio program to my face when I said, "Do you get what I mean, Shane?" And then you said, "I disagree with you." That's the real crux of the issue here, Shane. That's the real crux of it. You know, you want to go see your Johnny Cash drinking buddies. That's fine. That's fine, Shane. But I'm just, you know, I technically am the host of the show, and thus people agree with me. Do you see how this works?
In a perfect world, it would be like that, I'm sure. But we live far from that, Mr. Stein. But here's the thing.
We can strive for perfection. Yes.
We definitely do that here. But I don't know, Jack. You know, sometimes we pick up things that, you know, we sometimes just have to put down. You know what I'm saying? So it's one of those things, man.
All right. Okay. I think that's a fair argument. And we're just going to have to agree to disagree that traveling on Memorial Day weekend is a terrible idea. And we can all just celebrate the fact that I'm right and Shane is wrong. Speaking of, by the way, Shane, Billy is still he's very, very upset about what happened in Texas. And so he has decided to take another day off so that he can kind of collect himself. But Aaron Mason is good enough to come in, and we're going to be chatting with him about all the news that's been coming out about that over the last little while. And I think Shane, we'll just kind of have a casual, non-confrontational chat about it between Aaron Mason and I, because he is just the sweetest guy under the sun. So coming up next, if you want a non-yelling argument with just a couple of guys who really like each other, stick around. You're going to be chatting with Aaron Mason in a couple of minutes.